This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, it is Sharp Money here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Adam Burke here on the desk, pinch hitting for Patrick. Patrick has a great deal. He's gone for a while.
Yeah. Dustin, too.
Yeah, Dustin gone for a while, too.
Yep.
So here we are. We're going to pinch hit. We're going to entertain you for the next 3 hours is what we're going to do. And happy Bobby Bonilla Day to everybody who celebrates. Adam, this is a deal that, you know, in the sports world we make a pretty big deal out of because, like, it's kind of funny. You know, Bobby Bonilla gets the $1.19 million each and every year from I guess I didn't realize when I started looking into it. You know, it was only a $5.9 million buyout. And then they extended it for so long, and that's why this is so crazy that how much money he's going to make over the years. Because all it was $5.9 million. You get my point.
Right. And my favorite thing is that there's still 11 years of this left.
Yes,
he's still owed almost $12 million.
There was a great article that is up over on the Four Letter Network that talked about some of the other deferred deals that I was unaware of that were out there. You remember Chris Davis, obviously. Orioles, yeah, Chris Davis, the, you know, could hit 40 bombs but also strike out 40 times in a game somehow, right. Figure out how to do that. So he kind of has, like, the new Bonilla deal that's going on right now. So he was owed $59 million, and so he decided, well, you know, I've already made a bunch of money. So he's got a 15-year deferred deal. It goes all the way through 2037 for him, and he's going to get $9.16 million for each of the next couple of years, and then he gets $3.5 million all the way until 2037. So he's kind of got the new deal there with all of that, except he's going to make a whole bunch more money than Bobby Bonilla is.
Yeah, I mean, it's good work if you can get it, right?
I'm in for it.
To get paid not to do anything? Yeah. I mean,
I guess I didn't realize that. So Manny Ramirez is on one of these deals. King Griffey Jr. is on one of these deals. Max Scherzer is on one of these deals. Brett Saberhagen is still getting paid back in the day.
And there are like six or seven Dodgers that are going to be on these deals going forward that are going to get paid until, I don't know, the world may end before those things run out.
Yeah, it's so incredibly wild. But I had no idea that there were so many other deals that were going on out there and that Chris Davis's deal is basically like the greatest deal ever for a dude that was fine there for a while. And then it was like, you know, we'll deal with power if you can hit 230. We can't deal with power if you only hit 160.
Right. Yeah, that makes it a little bit tough. And I'm pulling it up right now to see where he is. He is the fifth highest paid player, so to speak, on the Orioles for this season.
There it is.
Who might be the best team in baseball, by the way.
Yes, might be. And, you know, we'll talk a ton of baseball today. We'll get into a bunch of football as well. But we do actually have a first pitch that's coming to you here in just a few minutes. It's the Astros and the Blue Jays. This is Hunter Brown, Yarel Rodriguez. This is currently Astros minus 130 on the road as favorites, plus 110. Blue Jays at home as underdogs. It is 8.5 on the total, slightly shaded towards the under here. Adam, whenever we take a look at what the Astros have been doing, obviously figured it out. You know, this was a team that was super, super struggling, got it going in June. Brown's taking the hill here, 4.37 ERA, 1.37 whip on the season. But if you kind of look at those stats that you and I like to look at, it's a 3.54 xFIP and a 3.68 Sierra, which is much, much more palatable for him. He's still got a 26% K rate, sub 10% walk rate. He's got 11% swinging strikes. And so you can kind of see Hunter Brown really roughed up at the beginning of the year, but you kind of look at these last seven starts for him, at least six innings in all seven of those, all of them being quality starts. He had at least six Ks in six of the seven of those starts. So Hunter Brown, even though the surface stats don't look that great because he had a really bad first month and a half of the season, he's actually gotten it going here over the last month and a half.
Yeah, and the thing for Hunter Brown is that the Astros finally got through to him, and they were like, dude, your fastball's not very good. Stop throwing it. So if you look at his fastball usage, it's taken a dramatic downturn over those seven starts that you mentioned. 1.47 ERA, 3.04 FIP. Not only that, but his average exit velocity against in his last seven starts, just 82.9 miles per hour. So he's not getting hit hard at all. He's missing a lot more bats with a different, you know, pitch usage and pitch arsenal. Last start, he did throw a lot of fastballs, but it was against Colorado. Felt like he could overpower them. He was able to do that. And this Toronto team, I mean, they're a mess.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really have some tough decisions to make here with the upcoming trade deadline where, you know, they've said, hey, we're not going to trade that young core. We're still going to try to build around those guys. We have some other guys that are available, but this core isn't going to get it done in Toronto. And I think that they really need to probably take this trade deadline with so many teams in a position to buy, you take this trade deadline and really reshuffle the deck.
Yeah, I'm looking at this game. You talk about the fastball usage, too, and since they've kind of scaled it back a little bit with him, since he doesn't have to throw it as much, he's actually like 2 miles per hour faster on his fastball than he was at the beginning of the season as well, because I'm guessing that he's got a little bit more in the tank. He feels a little bit more comfortable dialing it up a little bit more since he doesn't have to throw it as often. I actually like the Astros here in this game, because you look at Rodriguez making his 7th start on the year. He's got a 5.6 ERA. And you look at those advanced stats, and while it is a little bit lower here, Adam, he's still a 4.91 xFIP guy. He's still a 5.11 Sierra guy. He's only got a 20% K rate. He's up at a 14% walk rate as well. The Astros, with the way that they're playing, with Hunter Brown, with the way that he's flipped things around, and with Rodriguez, those surface stats not really lying to us. He is kind of this 5 ERA guy right now anyway. I kind of like the Astros as short favorites here on the road against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I agree with this one. Also, in the two appearances since Yariel Rodriguez was recalled, he's only faced 13 batters. So this is not a guy who's working very deep into games right now either. When you look at this Toronto bullpen, they don't really have a long man at this point in time. So this is going to be kind of a Johnny Holstaff approach for them. But Rodriguez may bury them early in the game anyway.
We'll have three excellent guests over the course of the next 3 hours. Zach Jackson going to join us. He's going to talk about the Browns with us. Our own Will Hill's going to join us. Zach Cohen going to join us as well. So you'll want to be here for that. The big news coming out of today, and actually tons of big news, stuff actually going on as we were getting ready to come on air as well. But the biggest of the big is Paul George to the Sixers here, Adam. They also extend Maxey and Kelly Oubre. So you have this Sixers team that's going to go with the big three approach. We've seen the Celtics do the kind of big three approach as well. It worked out for them, obviously. And so the Sixers say, hey, we're going to pay Paul George. We're going to give him what he wants. We're going to give him the years that he wanted as well. We're going to pair him up with a former MVP in Embiid. Maxey, obviously, on a massive, massive upswing as well for this team. And I kind of like the move here for him. Even keeping Oubre is one of those things that I think is pretty interesting as well. So here we go again. I think these teams are looking and saying, if we don't have three guys, then we're probably not going to be able to get it done. And so they go out, get that third guy, Paul George for the Sixers.
Yeah, and I think it's what they needed. I think they needed that third scorer who could really be a guy that can go out there and take some of the pressure off Embiid, maybe also put the team in a position where, you know, maybe Embiid doesn't have to play as much. Mm-hmm. You know, they can kind of monitor his minutes, monitor his workload a little bit. And George is a guy that, you know, I mean, I think when he has to be the go-to guy, it's a little bit difficult for him, but when he can be that, you know, supplemental secondary scorer, tertiary scorer, or something like that, that's a role I think he can really thrive in. So I think this move makes sense for the 76ers. And look, I mean, it's good to see that, you know, the Eastern Conference trying to have something of an arms race here, because The Western Conference, I mean, it laps them outside of Boston. And, of course, Boston wins the NBA title. But, you know, Giannis being banged up, the Cavs are kind of in no man's land right now. The Magic have gotten better, you know, here so far. So I think some of the teams in the Eastern Conference kind of trying to level up a little bit, and the Sixers kind of making a big splash here today, as they should.
Yeah, and then another just a kind of an under-the-radar depth pickup that they made as well. Andre Drummond is going to join the Sixers as well. I'm not sure who Andrew is, but I do know that Andre is going to be joining
the 76ers. I was trying so hard.
Yeah, I don't know who Andrew is, but I do know that Andre Drummond is going to be joining the 76ers. Wyatt Tomchek, the voice that you heard right there with us. The Celtics plus 295 to win it all, and that does move the Sixers to 8-1. They are your second shot now to win it all in the NBA this year. Thunder at plus 850. Thunder make a move today as well. I mean, they go and sign Isaiah Hartenstein, 3 years, $87 million for this Thunder squad. And again, we start talking about these teams, and while Hartenstein doesn't make a big three for them, we do see these teams starting to get depth guys, starting to get guys that they think are going to help them make that championship run. And so they go out, get him, bring him in, pay him a ton of money. I know people are going to look at the stats from last year, Adam, and they're going to say, wait, this guy, 3 years, $87 million. Guys, the NBA contracts is just the way it is. Like, these guys just get paid ridiculous amounts of money. And Hartenstein goes in, joins his Thunder team. And, again, another good move to kind of give them that second kind of depth type stuff that goes on that you need if you're going to make that championship run.
Yeah, I mean, our own Jonathan Von Tobel, along with, like, half of the network this week on vacation. But, you know, the Hartenstein move was enough for him to go on Twitter and say that the Thunder should be favored to win the West. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is the situation that we're looking at right now. And as you mentioned, you know, plus 850 here along with the Nuggets to be the team out of the Western Conference to win the NBA title. And, I mean, this is a team that obviously made huge strides last year, and they're looking to build upon it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think enough teams do that. You know, I think a lot of teams get to a certain level where they're happy with where they're at, but then they don't try to scale it. They don't try to, you know, spend while the iron is hot, so to speak, and kind of level up a little bit. And that's what the Thunder are doing here. And, you know, it was enough for JVT to take some time away during his vacation to say something about it. So it must be a pretty big move in that regard.
Yeah, and we're going to continue. I mean, tons of news. Just like I said, this stuff is happening kind of as we speak. One of the little bullet points we had in here to talk about was that LeBron James had personally called Klay Thompson, probably making his pitch for Klay Thompson to go to L.A. and join the Lakers. And instead, we get the news as we're coming on air right now that Klay Thompson is actually going to be heading to Dallas, and he is going to join the Mavs. Not really a big three, because I don't think that Klay Thompson fits really the big three category anymore with all of that. That said, if there's anything left in the tank at all, you are going to get, you have Kyrie who can get to the bucket, and if you collapse on him, you kick it back out to Klay. If he can just get where he can hit wide open threes again, it does make Dallas a much better team. The problem was is Klay just couldn't hit anything this past year. Hopefully there's enough left in the tank that this is a move that it makes things interesting, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the important thing, you know, and also for Klay Thompson, I mean, you know, as you and I talked about before the show here, maybe he got tired of paying those California taxes. So,
yes.
You know, figures, all right, well, I'll go to Dallas instead. And look, I mean, this is a Dallas team that was second in the NBA in three-point rate and kind of, you know, middle of the pack below average in three-point shooting. So they need a guy like Thompson. It makes a lot of sense here. We'll see if he's got anything left in the tank, but maybe a fresh start helps him.
I know. I hope he has something left in the tank, because I just want some of these moves. I want these moves to mean things. I want to make things interesting. I hope we can sit here and talk about this here in you know, middle of the season going, oh, look at this resurgence here for Klay Thompson and look how good the Mavs are. Whenever people are collapsing on Kyrie and then Luka and he's hitting those wide open threes. Zach Jackson going to join us, talk some Browns here when we come back.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
I got to be honest. I thought the spring special would be over as we got to July the 1st. It's no longer spring. You know, it's summer.
No longer spring.
It's summer. But guess what? The spring special continues. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give you 13 months of VSIN Pro for the price of 12. It's $199. You go to VSIN.com/subscribe and use the promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. And we're going to give you the spring special even though it's summer. I don't know what we're doing around here. I mean, maybe we should switch this thing to the summer special. But in any regard, you can go in and apparently today still get 13 months for the price of 12 for just $199.
We'll call it the springing into summer special.
We're springing into something. That is for sure. Go in and take advantage of this, again, this offer that I thought was going to be done today. So I was lying to people all day yesterday on the network. I was like, you better go do it today. It's going to be gone tomorrow. Ha! Guess what? Jokes on me, I guess. We're going to continue on with this. So now joining us, we're going to talk some football because we talk a not yet.
Still
not
trying
yet.
To connect here.
So, all right, not yet. Well, okay, well then
we can still talk football.
We can still talk some football. Well, how about this? We'll go back and we'll start talking a little bit more about all these moves that are still going on over in the NBA. This one, another speculation that maybe Chris Paul, his buddy LeBron, might be giving him a call to see if he wanted to come down, hang out with him down in L.A. Chris Paul, not going to be the case. He's actually going to go to the San Antonio Spurs here, Adam, which pretty interesting now because you get Wimby, at least a veteran presence to go in if Chris Paul, again, has anything left in the tank, one of the greatest point guards of all time, in my opinion, but obviously on the wrong side of the career arc here with all of this. But I was worried more than anything, not that this Chris Paul deal is something that's going to change the tides over in the West or anything, but I was worried if Wimby was ever going to be able to get any sort of support whatsoever, strictly because people might not want to go to San Antonio, right? Like it's not a big, sexy city. It's not one of those things where you get all excited about going to, but at least Chris Paul said, you know what, I'll go play with this dude for a year. Let's see what that's all about.
I mean, if nothing else, Chris Paul can still pass. You know, he's still going to be able to feed Wemby. He's still going to be able to, you know, pass him open and give him some opportunities. And, hey, I personally like San Antonio. I was there a few months ago. It was a fun time.
No, it's a great city. It's just not a sexy city.
It's, you know? No, it's not sexy. But I will say this, again, significant tax benefits to playing in Texas.
It's true. I'm sure a lot of these guys are, like, tired of paying 10% off the top over there in California,
sure.
Especially if they're not going to win.
I'm sure they are.
Now joining us here, Progressive Guest Line, is Zach Jackson, covers the Browns for The Athletic. You can find him at Akron Jackson over there on the Twitter machine. Zach, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Glad to be here.
So let's kick things off, and right off of the bat, we have the The big question heading into the offseason is, are we ever going to see the version of this Brown squad that we believe we can see? And that is, of course, on Deshaun Watson's shoulders. As we have, as you have followed this, you know, day in, day out, are we hearing good things? Are we thinking we're going to get the Deshaun Watson of 3 or 4 years ago? Or are we still seeing kind of that erratic Deshaun Watson that we've seen over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, I mean, it's the third year of different circumstances, right? We haven't really seen it. I mean, let's just be honest. He's played 12 games. He's played 12 good quarters. So now he's coming off a rare surgery. We didn't see a ton in the spring because he was on a pitch count. And, you know, what can you see in the spring anyway? I don't know. I mean, I would have to say no that we're not. But, you know, the last time we saw his best game. So if he comes back, the Browns feel like they've put a good team around him. You know, the comfort and the rust and all of those things should be improved tenfold or a hundredfold from the previous two off seasons. And if he's healthy, then I think we're going to find out relatively quickly. And, you know, you need to look at who this team plays in October and November. So I don't have a lot of confidence in it happening, but I'm not ruling it out. And it's just like, you know, if this team has Deshaun Watson playing pretty well and Nick Chubb playing pretty well, then they're in business. But those are two pretty big question marks here as we inch closer to the start of training camp.
Zach, speaking of Nick Chubb, I mean, I'm a Browns fan. I will never forget seeing that Nick Chubb injury. Just awful for him, not only as a player, but also as a person. Well, how's Chubb progressing here throughout the course of the offseason? And we know that the Browns have made some moves. The backfield, Dante Foreman, Nyheim Hines. Are they kind of planning for life without Chubb? And is he, what kind of trajectory is he on?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one, Adam, because I think you could easily make the case that they're planning for life with Chubb and they just have these guys just in case because every team needs them. Or you could also look and say, hey, they gave Nyheim Hines some money. They have Jerome Ford. They got Pierre Strong a year ago, and they think, I mean, he's going to be on the team whether he's in the rotation or not. He's maybe their best special teams player. So maybe they are preparing for life without Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb hates talking to the media more than anything in the world. he has not said much, but the updates he shared on his social media and the few that we've gotten on the record from him and from the team are positive. Now, I think it's 3.5 weeks they show up at the Greenbrier for the start of training camp. I don't know that he'll be ready for the beginning, and I don't think that matters. I think, you know, by about mid-August, there'll have to be a decision on, okay, is he ready to go, and is he going to be on the week one roster, or are they going to keep him on the PUP and maybe go for the first 6 weeks? I really don't know that answer then, and I don't think there's a bad answer because I think this team looks at having Nick Chubb in late October, early November, and then if he is good, having him really good and fresh in December, which has always been the plan. I mean, they've kept him on a pretty good pitch count even when they've got the best version of him. And the best version of him is so good that this is a big deal. Nobody talks about it because of Watson, right? And we talk about the defense, and it was so far into last season, it was week two, that he was kind of out of sight, out of mind. But if this team has Nick Chubb in the closer's role with this defense, then they can win the big games that they'll need to win down the stretch.
So in our recently released NFL betting guide, we talked a lot about the awards markets, and DraftKings now has comeback player of the year up. Aaron Rodgers, the favorite, plus 125. Joe Burrow, the second favorite, plus 250. Kirk Cousins is 5-1. Anthony Richardson, 6-1. And then Chubb at 12-1. Do you think Chubb is maybe worth a look in that market, or is it just going to be, you know, too quarterback heavy?
Yeah, I like that. I had not seen that. I did see that they made a Joe Flacco kind of clarification for that award. Yeah, you know, do quarterbacks usually win the major awards in the NFL? Yes. But, I mean, you know, what will we be grading Nick Chubb on? You know, with Nick Chubb playing a full-time role for 6 or 8 games and getting 600 yards and scoring 6 or 8 touchdowns for a team that's winning. And if you look at that schedule, too, Adam, playing its biggest games, its TV games, in the back half of the year, because I think the schedule makers can say there's not many safe bets in this league, but one of them is the AFC North. It's going to be a grinder. It's going to be great television, right? So I like that. I like that number. I had not previously thought of that, but I do think for a Browns fan, that would be a decent way to invest in, you know, this Nick Chubb comeback becoming a hit.
Talking to Zach Jackson, covers the Browns for The Athletic. Zach, of course, the acquisition of Jerry Jeudy was much talked about. We have not seen probably the best version of Judy so far in the NFL. Yet to have a 1,000-yard season, of course, super highly touted coming out of Alabama, making, you know, ridiculous plays there for that squad. What are the expectations for him coming in? I mean, is this a 1A, 1B type situation with him and Amari Cooper? Or are we looking at, hey, he's accepted, kind of he's going to be the second receiver in this offense, and that's just kind of how it's going to have to play out?
Yeah, even though the Browns gave him a new contract right away, which is just silly to me, I think they have fair expectations for Jerry Jeudy, and that is that he's not going to do it all the time. He in no way is in Amari Cooper's galaxy. But they look at it like Amari Cooper, David Njoku, and then Jeudy gives them something that they didn't really have, right? And they still trust in Cedric Tillman headed to his second year. They believe that there's better than we saw from Elijah Moore last year. And they think that Judy's just kind of that missing piece. They think his speed and his ability to play both ways will give them some matchups that he didn't have and that they weren't able to exploit in the past. So I think there's certainly a level of expectation and optimism, but I don't think the Browns are saying, boy, do we need Jerry Jeudy to finally get that 1,000-yard season. They need a healthy Amari Cooper and an available Amari Cooper, right? They need David Njoku, who continued to build on last year when he had that very rare year 7 breakout. Do they need something from Jeudy? Sure. Can anybody be sure they're going to get it from Jeudy specifically consistently? No, he's never done it. And if Amari is not available for whatever reason, then this still has potential to be a bottom three receiving core in the league.
Zach, we got about 45 seconds left. I want to ask, because most of the defense is still intact from last year, and Jim Schwartz did a hell of a job with that unit. But the linebacking corps is different. You got Devin Bush and Jordan Hicks now in the mix. Are those guys better fits for the Schwartz defense than what they previously had?
Hicks is. He has a past relationship with Schwartz. And they felt like that they weren't going to pay Walker and Taki Taki what they were asking. They were ready to move on in that department. You know, JOK is their linebacker A1, and you saw it last year, the best version of him. He's playing for an extension. I think he'll get it. I don't know if it'll be before the season or during. If Devin Bush is playing at him, it's big, big trouble. But linebacker in the Schwartz defense is the least important position when they line him up. Now, I think you saw how important it can be when you get a guy to play like JOK, but I think they're always going to put their resources into the pass rushers and to the cover guys, and they're going to just look for experience and fit. And I think, you know, still with Tony Fields there, with what JOK did last year and with Hicks from his past, I think they feel like they have a fit.
He is Zach Jackson. Find all of his great work over at The Athletic, covering the Cleveland Browns on the Twitter machine at Akron Jackson. Zach, appreciate the time, man. Appreciate you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Zach.
We're going to continue on here talking some football when we come back. Adam, there is a guide that we have put out. It is already out, and you actually wrote the AFC North section, so why not go ahead and get into the AFC North?
Works for me. Let's do it.
I'm going to see what you think about Cincinnati and the Ravens, because I think I'm a little off market on both of those teams when it comes down to it. AFC North when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
No longer new. I'm not going to call it new, but boy, is it shiny. It is the new VSIN.com, VSIN.com. Go on over there and take a look. It is your best bets. You're getting your betting splits. You're getting the articles. You're getting odds that you can go in and look at the state you live in and see the different books and what they are offering you. You've got the betting tools over there as well. And if you're new to this whole betting thing, we also have some betting guides over there to help you figure things out. I mean, listen, not everybody is proficient in betting in every single sport, so we're going to help you out. If you're a tennis bettor, we'll show you how to do that. If you want to get into NASCAR, maybe Wyatt will help you out on that. Who knows? We'll see how that all goes down. But VSIN.com, VSIN.com, mobile friendly as well. Matt Brown and Adam Burke in here today on Sharp Money. We just talked some Cleveland Browns. We just talked about our guide that we put out as well. You did the AFC North. You dug in. You did the work on these teams. So let's just go ahead and we'll kick it off here with the Browns and continue this discussion, get your opinion, your thoughts on the Browns. You are a fan, but also someone that has looked deep into them now that you wrote that portion of the guide. I don't think I'm breaking any news here, Adam, when we say, I think this team goes how Deshaun Watson goes, and we have yet to see really anything that resembled at all what he did down in Houston when he was, I mean, widely considered. If you go back, and I think it's so far in people's memory and all the stuff that was going on, the reason he got suspended and all stuff, this was a guy, if you would have asked in the height of his powers, hey, give me your top five quarterbacks in the NFL. He's certainly making that list. And somebody, if you said, give me the top three, he might have made your top three list because of what he was able to do. He's not even come anywhere close to that since he's been in Cleveland. There's obviously no excuses now, right? Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, you're probably going to have Chubb back. You got Njoku, all the stuff like that. Elijah Moore, no excuses. You got to get it done.
Yeah, and he's still a really good offensive line, too. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are no excuses for Deshaun Watson. And, you know, it was said that Kevin Stefanski completely reworked his playbook prior to last season, trying to capitalize on what it is that Watson does really, really well. And, look, I mean, yeah, the Browns went 5-1 in Deshaun Watson's six starts, but he had a 7-4 touchdown interception ratio. He was sacked 17 times in those six games. They didn't win because of him. They won because of the defense. So, yeah, I mean, you really look, and this is what a lot of teams are doing around the NFL, right? I mean, skill position talent across the league is maybe better than ever in terms of pass-catching running backs, in terms of teams having two, three really good wide receivers. The tight end is being used more as well. Every team in the league is trying to set the quarterback up for as much success as possible. Cleveland has done the same thing. And look, I could make an argument. You may disagree with me. Maybe other people out there do as well. This is the best roster in the AFC outside of the quarterback position. Oh, so it is all on Watson.
Yeah, I mean, if you look up and down, I mean, you look up and down, there's really nothing to poke holes at. I will say this, difficult schedule.
Yes.
Really tough. Yep. If you look at kind of the projected win totals, which is how we like to do it, we don't look in the past, we look in the future. Only Pittsburgh and New England have tougher schedules than Cleveland heading into this year. And so you do have that. And let's also add in what I have dubbed to be the division of death as we head into this year, because you know Baltimore's going to be good. You know Cincinnati's going to be good. And Pittsburgh should be better anyway because they got zero out of the quarterback position last year. And even a washed-up Russell Wilson's going to be better than what they got last year. And so you don't get any favors in the division that you play in either.
Right. No, you really don't. And look, I think that's a really difficult thing when it comes to Pittsburgh, especially because after the bye week, their schedule is miserable. I mean, they play all six of their AFC North games, along with Washington, who I don't know what Washington will be by November 10th. If Jaden Daniels is a dude, Washington could be pretty good by that point. Then they're also at Philadelphia, and they play Kansas City on Christmas. So Pittsburgh's schedule is absolutely miserable after the bye week, and we joke about it, right? Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. You may have heard that before on our airwaves.
Yeah.
Like, he gets the most out of his teams. But even though this team is better, I think this could be the first one with a losing record just because that meat grinder schedule at the end of the year is so rough.
Yeah, you look at these odds for the AFC North. Plus 130 on the Ravens, plus 145 on the Bengals. You got 6-1 on the Browns and 850 on the Steelers. I don't know if that's long enough on the Steelers to me. I think they're clearly number four. And as you mentioned, then you couple it with the schedule as well with all that. I mean, I can't imagine a number anywhere close to where we're sitting right now where I would want to come in on the Steelers. Like, this would need to be 14, 15 or something like that, in my opinion, because not only I am of the mindset, I believe that Russell Wilson is washed. So I do believe that. I think we do see Justin Fields before the end of the season is over with. Russell Wilson, you kind of look last year, guy was just completely lost. He lost that deep ball as well, which is kind of his one saving grace for a while with all this. And so I kind of look at where we are with all this. So what do you think about the plus 130 with the Ravens and 145 with Cincinnati? I think that should be flip-flopped. I think Cincinnati is the best team in the division. I think if you look at Baltimore, there was some significant losses for them last year, and they ran really pure last year as well, in my personal opinion. And so I know there's some question marks. Joe Burrow coming back from injury. I know this is now the second revamp of the offensive line that we have seen in Cincinnati as well. We keep hearing this, oh, no, they got the offensive line figured out this time, and then Joe Burrow's running for his life and getting sacked a million times a game. But it does. They at least have the talent. Now, whether they can all play together, I don't know. T. Higgins going to come back. You like to think that he's going to have the right mindset. He is making $21 million. I mean, like, I know he wants a long-term deal, but, bro, you're getting $21 million to play football for 1 year. So what do you think where the Ravens sit in Cincinnati, and how far apart do you see them?
Yeah, the one thing I will say, you mentioned about Pittsburgh, I wouldn't waste my time with Russ. I would just go with Fields right away. Because remember, when people were talking about Justin Fields getting traded last year, everyone's like, well, he should go to Atlanta. Mm. Be with Arthur Smith. Yeah. Well, now he can be with Arthur Smith. I don't know why they're wasting their time with Russ. But, look, you know, on the question with the Bengals, you know, not only do you have the Joe Burrow question, and it is a very big question because this is an injury that, you know, we typically don't see a whole lot in the NFL with a quarterback coming back from a torn wrist ligament like this. And you do wonder if it kind of lingers, if it is something that winds up being problematic as the season goes along. But also, this defense took a massive step back last year. And I guess you could argue that, you know, maybe they kind of thought the season was over when Burrow went down. Maybe you didn't get the, you know, max effort on the defensive side and all that. But, I mean, they went from 14th in rush EPA and 7th in dropback EPA in 2022 to 25th in rush EPA and 24th in dropback EPA last year. This is a defense that's got to figure some things out. And everyone was singing the praises of Lou Anarumo in 2022, specifically the halftime adjustments he was making, because Cincinnati was far and away the best second-half defense in the NFL during that 22 campaign. Last year, everything kind of changed for them. So it's not just the questions on the offensive side for me with the Bengals. I have questions on the defensive side, too.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You look at the schedule for Cincinnati, one of the things that they did luck out just because of where they finished last year, you have the sixth easiest schedule in all of the NFL for Cincinnati. And so, yeah, there are some landmines in there. You do go in week two, you go on the road to Kansas City, but you start to look at this, and Adam, it's like New England, like we said, on the road to Kansas City, but then Washington, Carolina, there's New York in week six, Vegas in nine. You get the Chargers in 11. There are a lot of wins. Like, there are a lot of wins on this schedule for Cincinnati. Should Joe Burrow's wrist be okay?
Yeah, and not only that, the Chargers are on that, you know, kind of half bye week because they play Baltimore on Thursday night. So, yeah, back to back roadies, but the trip out to LA, they get a little bit of extra rest before that. Then they hit the bye, and then what could be a really pivotal game against Pittsburgh there on December 1st. So, the schedule is very favorable for Cincinnati, and that's the tough thing for me because in our NFL betting guide, I leaned under with the Bengals because I have those defensive concerns, because I have those Burrow concerns. At the same time, they're favored in, what, 13 or 14 of their 17 games?
Yeah.
And unless Burrow gets hurt, that's probably not going to change. So this is a team that will have expectations, does have a weaker schedule relative to their division brethren, but, you know, the late bye week is Burrow – because, you know, I mean, think about it. Last year, Burrow had the calf injury in training camp. He probably wasn't going to play in the preseason anyway, but he was awful in his first three or four games last year. Then he kind of found his stride a little bit, and then the wrist thing happened. So, you know, I think there are a lot of questions about Burrow's health coming into the season. And I think there's also questions, you know, if you're Zach Taylor, I mean, do you kind of have to play Burrow a little bit in the three preseason games and run that risk and take that chance? Because it is imperative that you start out well and take advantage of, as you alluded to, that weak schedule you have early in the year.
Yeah, and I look at this, too, in one of those deals where I know it's not for everyone, but if you want to kind of come in and look at these dynamic markets, everything's moving, right? And so win totals move as well, which is one of the cool things about, you know, books like DraftKings and stuff who keep everything up all the time. Once you get past week 10, it is Chargers, then bye week, then Steelers. Yes, there is Dallas on that schedule, but then it's Tennessee, Cleveland, Denver, Pittsburgh to wrap out the season. Like, they are going to be favorites in every one of those games, probably except for Dallas, and maybe even at Dallas, depending on how Dallas looks and how Cincinnati looks, you know, heading into that game right there. You could almost come in and buy in on a dynamic win total there after the week 10 game against Baltimore, which on the road they might lose, as it is anyway, and come in and do stuff like that. Like, you know, again, I set up reminders in my calendar. If you want to do this, I highly recommend it. But it's stuff that you can remind yourself, like, going, oh, man, after week 10, what is that win total sitting there for Cincinnati? Because, man, that is it really, really softens up there at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think it's something you want to look at in terms of division futures here as well, because you look at the Ravens, the way that their schedule starts. They're at Kansas City in the kickoff game. Vegas at home, that's a game that they should win. But then they're at Dallas. I don't know if Buffalo is going to be any good. I guess we'll kind of find out. But then at Cincinnati before things get a little bit easier for Baltimore, kind of in the middle part of the schedule. So, yeah, you don't have to invest in these markets in the preseason. As you mentioned, you get a lot of good betting opportunities as the season goes along as well.
Yeah, I mean, the plus 130, maybe after week one, is already better.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, so it's kind of one of those deals. If you like the Ravens.
Yeah, if they lose that game to Kansas City, you're probably getting a better number away.
Yeah, right away. Yeah. So you're not even having to wait all that long if you want to do that. So be sure to take advantage of that. When we come back, let's talk some NFL MVP.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you probably already know we got an NFL betting guide. But if you're not, head on over to VSiN.com/guide and you are going to find previews of all 32 teams. You're going to see how every one of us played the division, what we think about the conference, what we think about the Super Bowl as well. We do an awards breakdown. We've got everything in there. Any bet that made our accounts We threw it in here. We're getting it out nice and early, Adam, and we do this for the people because we want to make sure that you can get a number that is at least relatively close to the number that we got these bets at, because one of the things we hate hearing is, oh, these stale numbers, oh, these stale things you get. No, man, we're putting this thing out before everybody else.
Yeah, and that's the goal, you know, to be able to put this thing out there and let everyone jump on these preseason markets. And because, look, I mean, once you get to August, like, everyone's already got football on the brain. Right now, maybe not so much. So it's a good time to jump in on those markets and a good time to jump in over at VSiN.com and become a pro subscriber.
As you should. We talk about it all the time, and apparently still available for the discounted price. Who knew? Yeah. I mean, I guess. By the way, James Wood making his debut today. Yeah. Batting sixth, starting in left field for the Nationals, if not the top prospect in the minors, certainly one of the top five prospects in the minors, depending on the ranking system that you looked at. And so you look here, and Adam, it's a – you and I geek out about stuff like this. You and I follow, you know, the minor league stuff. And this is a guy that is a true difference maker if he lives up to even – 85% of what we've seen him so far in the minors.
Yeah, and I looked on Friday, I think it was, when they announced the call-up, and I think he was still 100-1 or something like that, maybe even a little bit higher in the Rookie of the Year market. Now he's down to 40-1 just by virtue of getting called up and being in the lineup. Still Paul Skeens' award to lose, but, you know, I mean, if Skeens gets hurt or the Pirates decide to roll him back or something like that.
You shut your dirty mouth over here, Skeens getting hurt. What do you – come on, man. Why would you even say that out loud? Put that bad juju into the air.
Look, 9 of the 10 guys last year that were the highest in four-seam fastball velocity have been hurt this year.
Have you seen his pregame routine? No. Could you guys do that? The little backpack that he had, like, I don't know, it was like a flotation
it's
device.
It's full of water like that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, these are all newfangled thing, because these guys are just like infinitely smarter than, you know, we were 20 years ago. Like, it's just like infinitely smarter than all of that. I wasn't smart enough to have a mustache, which apparently was something that you do and you throw 102 miles an hour.
Is this just the LSU thing for you, or are you on him for awards markets?
Oh yeah, no, I have him. Okay. It was the deal. God, something going in the eye here. If you're watching at home, there's, like, you know, there's things floating in the air here at the. At the D.
Is it Adam's
hazard pit? No, the fan is off right now.
So basically, because I do follow the minor league stuff like you, I could kind of see what they were doing, right? It was the first three starts, three innings, hard out. Mm-hmm. Then they let him go four. Then they let him go five. Then they did the back-to-back of, like, six innings, and I'm like, okay, so here it is. Like, you know, and so, like, right – so – made the bet on him for Rookie of the Year, and then literally 3 days later they called him up. So I got lucky on the timing with all of that. But it was just, you could kind of see, right? It was the, all right, we're going to ramp him up. And once they did the back-to-back six innings, I was like, okay. I thought maybe it was 2 weeks away. I didn't know it was 3 days away. But, like, yeah, it was 3 days away.
And, I mean, he's the thing about him is he's been so efficient in most of his outings. He's been able to work deeper into games than I expected him to.
Yeah, yeah, no, seriously. It's crazy what he's able to do here. It is Sharp Money. It is Matt Brown. It is Adam Burke here on the desk for the fellas as we're pinch hitting for them. NFL MVP, this is also in our NFL betting guide, and you and I ended up on the same bet, and this bet is still available. It is a bet that I would still make today if I did not have it in my account, and you go in and you start to look at these MVP odds, and yeah, Patrick Mahomes, of course, he's going to be the short shot. Josh Allen, the CJ Stroud, Joe Burrow, all these guys that are super hot and big names coming into all this. And then you go down and you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling, and then, oh boy, our betting guide moved the market, buddy. It is no longer – it was 40 yesterday, 30 today, Jared Goff at MVP. I'm not going to say that we moved the market, but, I mean, it is now 30-1 instead of 40-1. Jared Goff, and I think this is one of those things where people look at this and laugh at him a little bit and go, yeah, Jared Goff, ha-ha, MVP. And then you go in and you start to dig into the numbers and you don't realize that this guy was second in the NFL in passing yards last year. He was fourth in touchdowns. He was third in yards per game, fifth in completion percentage. We could go on and on and on with all the stuff about Jared Goff, and then – you get the guy with year two of Jahmyr Gibbs, year two of Sam Laporta, year one basically of having Jameson Williams for a full training camp because he was injured and suspended, so you didn't have that at all. There's no reason to believe – still a good offensive line. There's no reason to believe that this production we saw last year was a mirage, and if anything, you can really talk yourself into how this should maybe get even better.
Yeah, so this is when you made an impassioned plea for this. One time I was doing a guest spot on The Handle with you and Mike Somich, and I was sitting in the back. I was talking to producer Steph, and you started talking about awards markets. You were talking about Jared Goff. And I'm like, all right, this makes sense. I like this. I think 40-1 is a pretty good number here. But I kind of sat on it, right? I waited for a little bit. And then on May 15th, the NFL schedule came out. And that was when I realized, okay, this guy's playing 14 of his 17 games indoors.
Yeah.
So when are the road games going to be? December 22nd in Chicago, not ideal, right? He's a guy who plays, who's notoriously bad in, you know, in subpar conditions, right? So when are they going to play at Lambeau? Well, that's the first week in November.
Yeah.
So that's okay. That's not bad.
Not bad. Not bad.
And then a game in Santa Clara against the 49ers on Monday Night Football at the end of December. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're going to need that game probably with the strength of the NFC North, and maybe San Francisco doesn't. Who knows?
Right.
I actually like the Rams in that division, but, you know, I think that Goff, everything sets up really, really well for him. And the other thing I think you made a really great point about is, you know, you do have more of Jahmyr Gibbs now. You do have more of Jameson Williams. There's a lot more explosiveness with his pass catchers. And a guy like Gibbs is going to pick you up some cheap yardage. I definitely like that. And then as I looked a little bit more into this, when you look at his on-target percentage based on Pro Football Reference numbers, 76.2% in the first year under Johnson, 80.3% in the second year. So this is a guy who is really grasping the offense well. I think this is a very, very high upside play, and I'm going to choose to believe that we did move the market on this one with our NFL betting guy.
I know. I'm going to believe it too. It was 40 yesterday because we talked about it on my show. So, like, it's happened here overnight. I mean, again, the other part about this that I really love, this is an awesome offensive line. So you're not only getting all of these weapons for him, but you have an offensive line in which he's going to have all – it doesn't matter whether he's mobile or not. You are talking about guys that grade out very, very highly. He has the number one tackle, according to Pro Football Focus, the number one center, according to Pro Football Focus, a top 10 other tackle, a top 10 guard, a top 15 guard. I mean, we're talking an excellent, excellent offensive line, which, again, as we know – if you're not mobile, you got to have an offensive line. He's got that, too. There's just, like, everything that really does point towards his direction and all this. I love the bet. One of my favorite bets I've made in a very long time. And again, when you have a number, like, even 30-1, when you have a number this big, Adam, all we need him to do is play himself into the conversation. And then now you can make yourself a portfolio where you're going to make money no matter what.
Yeah, and look, I mean, admittedly, it is hard to poke holes in the guys that are ahead of him. But
yes,
there
agreed.
Are some, right? I mean, Josh Allen – Keon Coleman's probably his number one receiver
right.
this year now. And so you got a lot of questions about Allen and that Bills offense. Mahomes, I mean, of course, you know, he's going to be there and the Chiefs will be really good again. But I don't know, maybe they get a little bit complacent. I don't know, who knows.
Or what if they moonwalk to the division? You know, what if they just moonwalk to the win in the division and, like, Mahomes is not even doing anything in fourth quarters?
Well,
you know?
And this is, you know, we talk about this all the time here on the show because I think it's really important to talk about this. When you talk about the awards markets, these are voted on by human beings who have a story to tell, right? They have a deadline. They have to write something that's, you know, unique and creative and all that. It's not really that creative or click-worthy when Patrick Mahomes wins it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, if Joe Burrow – I mean, look, Joe Burrow may come back and have a great year. I don't know. It's a possibility. You have a story there with Burrow for sure, but Lamar Jackson, you know, he just won it. You know, Brock Purdy, maybe a story, but Purdy's been really good the last couple of years and no one's wanted to vote for him. Aaron Rodgers would definitely be a story, but there's no guarantee that in his 40s, off the Achilles, he comes back and plays well. Are people going to get excited to, you know, vote for and write about Jalen Hurts? Probably not. Dak Prescott, probably same thing. Justin Herbert, the Chargers are going to run the football a ton.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know why he's lower than Jared
Me
Goff.
Neither. Me neither,
like,
at all.
Like, you can cross off enough of these guys or at least have enough doubt in your mind that Goff becomes a really attractive option along with everything that we've already talked about here.
Yeah, like, I've eliminated a lot of these dudes that have shorter odds than him for a lot of the stuff you just mentioned. Like, Herbert is laughable that his is shorter than his. We have one season of sample size for Jordan Love. Like, I think he could be good, but we have no idea. The fact that he has half, like, he's half the odds. Like, this is insane to me. And we go back and we start looking at a lot of this stuff. Aaron Rodgers at 16. One, people don't like Aaron Rodgers. People don't like Aaron Rodgers, so they don't want to vote for him anyway. If anything, they'll give him the consolation prize of the comeback player of the year or something like that. And plus, if you go look at Aaron Rodgers' statistics over the course of his career, he's one of the slowest quarterbacks there is in all of the NFL. He drains the play clock. If you run fewer plays, then you have fewer, like, the stats go down. It's just the way that it is too. So, I mean, there's so many different guys you can poke holes in here. Anthony Richardson, we saw three good games out of him. Like, three games out of Anthony Richardson. So I love that bet. And honestly, it is a bet that I'm almost positive we're going to figure out how to make money so long as he's able to stay healthy. I think we will be able to make money on that ticket. When we come back, our very own Will Hill's going to come in. We're going to talk everything. We're going to talk NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA. We might ask him some curling, maybe a little cornhole somewhere along the way when we come back here on Sharp Money.